Hey there, D&Ders, your friend Ian here with another brand new sponsor this week, Artwork by Katie. Now, as the son of a fairly successful artist, I grew up around the art world, saw many different styles of art. I know good art from bad, and I can honestly say that in addition to being a good friend, Katie is one of the best artists I have ever had the pleasure of seeing. Her works of art, be it drawings or paintings, are absolutely amazing. And Katie doesn't just do original works of art, she also does commission pieces. So if you're looking for that perfect piece of art to offset the decor in your home, office, or even in your place of business, go check out Artwork by Katie at linktr.ee/KatieArtworks. That's linktr.ee/KatieArtworks. You'll be blown away. Hey there, my D&Ders. This is your old buddy Ian here with a brand new sponsor this week. Now, you've all heard me talk about Chinese teachers in the past. I have never promoted a Chinese teacher quite like Chinese teacher Evian. Evian is a sweet, honest, and dedicated teacher who teaches every day. She not only makes certain that her students understand the differences in tonal pronunciation, she allows them the opportunity to get up during the class and read what it is that she is teaching so that each student knows that they are getting the best possible education and is pronouncing the words and tones correctly. So I'd like you to do right now is go to tinyurl.com/EvianCT and check her out. That's tinyurl.com/EvianCT. She makes learning this beautiful and wonderful language a lot of fun. And remember, Mandarin Chinese is the fastest growing language in the international job market today. This is the language that you want to learn if you don't want to work that boring 9-to-5 job, but you want to get a foothold in a company that has an international presence. They're all looking for Mandarin speakers, so let Evian be the one to introduce you to this language. You won't be disappointed. Hello and welcome to the DevCast. I am your host, author, and journalist, Ian Tott, and I'd like to thank you for joining me as we prepare to take our third look at the crimes of Gary Heidick. Before we get going, as always, I have the normal show notes. If you'd like to follow me on social media, just search for the DevCast. If you'd like to help support the show, there's a couple of ways that you can do this. First and foremost, you go to your favorite podcast app. Like the show, leave a 5-star review. They really do help the show out. Secondly, you can go to tinyurl.com/DCastPatreon, where for as little as $1.99 a month, you can get access to early ad-free shows as well as exclusive content, just like my first two Patreon supporters, Channel and Anthony, but also like my largest Patreon contributors, Samantha, Debbie, and Anthony. You too can become a Deathcaster just by going to that URL, tinyurl.com/DCastPatreon. All right, now that all of that is out of the way, find yourself a nice comfy chair, kick back and relax. I've got my coffee. I've got my cigarettes. Let's go into the crypt. When we left off last week, we had moved into the early to mid-1980s, discussing Gary Heidick, how he had gotten out of prison. He had met a woman through a mail-order bride service, and he had completely terrorized and dominated this young woman when she moved to the United States, and he ended up marrying her forcibly. How she had been able to escape And now we are moving into 1986. And that Heidek moves from the various disturbing crimes he had committed during the 1970s into a level of infamy that is almost unparalleled in Philadelphia history. And it begins in November of 1986, specifically November 26th. This is the day before Thanksgiving, when a 25-year-old woman by the name of Josefina Rivera is out on a street corner working as a prostitute on the corners of 3rd and Girard. Josefina had had two pretty heated arguments with her boyfriend earlier that evening. And
hello, welcome to the DevCast. I am your host, author, and journalist Ian Totten, and I'd like to thank you for joining me as we prepare to take our second look at Gary Heidek. Before we get into it, as always, I have the normal show notes. If you'd like to follow the show on social media, just search for the DevCast, DevCast Official, or DevCast True Crime. If you'd like to help the show out, there's a couple of ways you can do this. First and foremost, you can go to your favorite podcast app, leave a 5-star review, and follow the show. Secondly, you can go to tinyurl.com/DCastPatreon, where for as little as $1.99 a month, you can get access to early ad-free shows as well as exclusive content, just like my friends Channel Anthony, Debbie, Samantha, and Robert have done. All right, now that that's all out of the way, find yourself a nice comfy chair, kick back and relax. I've got my coffee. I've got my cigarettes. Let's go into the crypt.
He informs her that before they take care of business, he wants to go somewhere first. Heidek drives to a McDonald's where Josefina follows him inside. He gets himself a cup of coffee. They sit down and make idle chit-chat where he reveals his full name and then informs her that they're going to go back to his house to do the deed. Reaching the house, Rivera noticed a number of things. First and foremost, the house was fairly nondescript, although it was different from the other houses on the street, as it was not a row house. The yard was just as trash-strewn and run down as those around it, however. When Heidek parked the car inside of his garage, Rivera was surprised to see a 1971 Rolls-Royce parked there. This was Heidek's pride and joy. Josefina begins to feel a little more at ease in her mind, thinking that someone with these types of cars isn't going to be a problem. The first indicator to Rivera that something might be off, however, is when Heidek goes to open the front door to the house and he only has a half key. When she questions him about this, Heidek informs her that he broke off the other half, basically making the lock ineffective if you don't have the matching part to the key. A pretty ingenious idea on Heidek's part that is going to cause police some issues later on when they learn of Heidek's crimes. Going into the house, Heidek asks Rivera if she wants to watch a movie. When she declines this, he grows a little disgruntled towards her, and she realizes that she has made a misstep and quickly corrects this by claiming that she has 3 children at home and a babysitter. This is a lie. However, Heidek does not know it at this point. She's simply letting him know that she can't stay too long without being unkind towards him, which is a fairly smart move on Josefina's part. Heidek leads her upstairs, where they go into a bedroom that has a waterbed. Heidek gives her money, and they proceed to have sex. As the two of them are getting dressed a few minutes later, Josefina is standing there in her shirt, looking to put on her pants, When Heidek suddenly grabs her around the throat from behind, Josefina is able to turn around as he's squeezing, and with the last bits of air in her lungs, she informs him that she'll do whatever he wants so long as he doesn't take her life. Releasing her, Josefina collapses to the floor, and as the world comes back to her, she sees that a handcuff has been placed on her right wrist. Heidek then orders her to her feet, cuffing both of her hands behind her back before marching her out of the bedroom, down the stairs, and into the basement, where things take an even darker turn. Heidek marches Josefina over to a bare mattress in the corner. She begins to complain that she is unable to see, at which point Heidek picks up a piece of 2x4 and informs her that if she doesn't shut up, he is going to beat her with. Heidek then goes over to a pile of boxes and pulls out a muffler clamp and a length of chain. Now, if you don't know what a muffler clamp is, it is a large U-shaped piece of metal that is threaded on either end, and a flat piece of metal with two holes drilled into it goes over the threaded ends and is then secured on with a nut. This is used to hold the muffler onto your car. He places one end of the muffler clamp through the chain and then secures it around Josefina's leg before running the other part of the chain through a series of pipes on the floor and attaching another muffler clamp to Josefina's other ankle and effectively locking her into place with leg shackles. After doing this, Heidek takes super glue and a hairdryer out of the box and puts the glue onto the threads of these muffler clamps, using the hairdryer to dry out the super glue and make it more difficult for his now captive audience to get the nuts off of the clamp and escape. Now, this is evidence that prosecutors are later going to use as they attempt to prove that Heidek was in full control of his faculties when he took Josefina Rivera and the other women captive, as this is a very well thought out plan to keep a captive in his basement without fear that they are going to escape. After this, Heidek orders Rivera to sit down on the mattress, at which point he lies down next to her, places his head into her exposed lap, and goes to sleep. Rivera eventually falls asleep herself, and when she wakes up hours later, she's unsure of how much time has passed, only knowing that she is alone, naked, sitting in this basement with few avenues of escape and no answers as to what's going on. A few moments after this, Heidek comes downstairs with a sandwich and a glass of orange juice, which Josefina refuses, not realizing that by refusing this, it is going to be an exceedingly long period of time before he is going to offer her food again. With this refusal, Heidek places the items on a nearby table and then begins working on a large pit that has been dug not far from where Josefina is sitting with a pickaxe and shovel. It's roughly 4x4 feet wide and 2 feet deep, and Josefina would later state that upon seeing this, she instantly began trembling, thinking that it was meant as a grave. However, Gary Heidek has much darker things in store for Josefina Rivera than simply holding her captive and killing her. This pit is a torture device that Heidek is going to use to keep his captives in line Now, according to Josephina, as Heidek worked inside of this hole, he began to tell her about himself, that his dream was to have a large family, and that while he'd had a number of children from various women, the state had always come in and taken these children from him, and that this was unacceptable to him. So he had decided that he was going to take 10 women captive, hold them in the basement where they would serve as his sex slaves, and that each one of these women was going to bear him a child, and that she was going to be the first. To quote Josephina, Heidek said, "Society owes me a family." This was after he talked about Anne Jeanette and how they had had a child that was taken by the state, and that how he had gone to prison for, in his own words, helping her sister and having consensual sex with her. As we know from last week's episode, Heidek had taken this young woman hostage and locked her in a closet where he forced her to have sex with him. After working in the pit for a while, Heidek climbs out, walks over to Rivera, removes his penis from his pants, and orders her to give him oral sex, which she does, hoping to placate this obviously disturbed and twisted individual before forcing himself on her and then going back upstairs. Now, while Heidek is upstairs, Rivera sees a chance. She starts working on the bolts on one of her leg shackles, undoing them enough so that she is able to reach a window which has been boarded up. Rivera is able to get the boards off of the window, climb out into the yard, and she begins screaming for help. However, this neighborhood is such that screams from women are not uncommon, and the neighbors simply ignore them. Heidek, however, did not. He hears Rivera in the yard screaming. He rushes outside and slaps her across the face in an effort to silence her before trying to force her back through the window. Rivera goes limp. Heidek is unable to get her inside, so he runs back into the house, into the basement, and then uses the chain to pull her back inside, at which point he places her into the pit that he has been working on before placing a board on top of the pit. There's a piece of plywood. Rivera is too large for this pit, however, and she begins to scream that she can't breathe, at which point Heidek removes the board from the pit, drags Rivera out of it, and proceeds to beat her violently with a stick until she surrenders. He then throws her back into the pit, forcing her to press her chin against her chest so that she'll fit, puts the board back on top of it, and then places many bags of heavy dirt on top of this board. Heidek then gets a radio, which he brings downstairs and turns up loudly so that should she begin to scream, no one will hear her. Rivera would later state that she was kept in this pit for precisely 27 hours, which she was able to note as the radio DJs would tick off the hours every hour on the hour. And when Heidek finally did return, it was November 29th. She's still in the hole when she hears Heidek and another person come down into the basement. The other person is a woman who is crying hysterically. Heidek is ordering her to shut up, at which point she hears Heidek shackle the woman up. He then removes the dirt and the boards from the top of the hole and drags Rivera up. Rivera stated that she was stiff from being confined to the small space, and it took her a few moments to regain her senses enough that she could tell what was going on around her. And when she did, she saw a young African-American woman chained up on the mattress, nude. He informs his first captive that this woman's name is Sandy before leaving the two of them alone. After Heidek left, Sandy introduces herself as Sandra Lindsay and explains that she has known Heidek for 4 years when he began coming around a place for the mentally handicapped called the Elwin Institute. Rivera learns that Sandra was, while not technically a girlfriend to Heidek, she was one of his sexual partners. He had shared her with Tony Brown, who you'll remember is the individual that had lived off and on with Gary, and that he had been very good to her over the years. Sandra then informs Josephina that she had become pregnant with Heidek's child at one point, but the thought of being a mother was not something that she was capable of being, so she had gone and had an abortion, which enraged Heidek, who had offered her at various points since then over $1,000 to have his child. Again, Sandra was not interested in this, and to quote Josephina, Sandra stated, Heidek said, "You're going to have my baby now, whether you want to or not." Roughly an hour after he left the two women in the basement, he returned, announcing that it's dinner time and giving them both crackers and water. Afterwards, he forces Sandra to give him oral sex before having sex with her and then having sex with Rivera. I say they're having sex. Reality, this is rape, although the women are not fighting it as they have little choice in the matter, unfortunately. But really, that is what Heidek is doing and is going to do over the next number of months. He's going to repeatedly rape these women at his leisure, hoping to impregnate all of them. He then informs Josephina that the story that Sandra has told him is true, before ending with, "Well, she's now going to have my baby whether she likes it or not." Again, echoing the words that Sandra had told her when Heidek left them alone in the basement. The following day, November 30th, Heidek makes both women a breakfast of oatmeal, and he's sitting down in the basement talking to them when the sounds of someone pounding on the door upstairs startles the three of them. This is Sandra Lindsay's mother, who has learned through Tony Brown that she might be at Gary Heidek's house. Again, you have to remember, Sandra is developmentally disabled and lives with her mother even at the age of 25 years old, and her mother knows her daughter, knows her habits, and knows that her daughter will not go out and then simply not come home again. So she's tracking her down to the only place that she thinks her daughter may very well be. Heidek orders the women not to say a word, and they sit in the basement tensely until Sandra's mother. Once Sandra's mother leaves, Heidek informs Sandra that she is going to write her mother a letter claiming to have run off to New York, but not to worry, she is fine. Heidek is going to end up mailing this letter from New York City, which is not going to dissuade her mother that something has happened to her daughter. Over the course of the next month, a routine is going to settle in of Sandra and Rivera being left alone in the basement for long periods of time, forced to have sex with Heidek while lying on this mattress, wearing nothing more than a thin shirt, sparse amounts of food, and beatings from Heidek. the worst of which was said to be what they called the hanger, which is when Heiduk would take one of his captives, put a handcuff on one wrist, and then attach the other end of the handcuff to a hook that had been installed in one of the floor joist beams, effectively forcing the woman to stand with one arm outstretched above her head for hours on end. Now, Josephine has said that the beatings that Heiduk gave them were absolutely horrific. If they misbehaved, he would beat them with a shovel handle, ordering them not to scream or cry, but that the force of the beatings obviously made the two of them cry out, which forced Heiduk, in his twisted mind, to beat them harder, or to place them on the hook or into the hole, which he had widened and deepened considerably over the course of the two women's captivity. Heiduk informed the two of them that these punishments were necessary, as there was always a chance that they would be discovered, and that Sandra's family were becoming a near constant thorn, continuing to come over to the house, even going so far as to contact the police, who got the name of Gary Heiduk from her family, although they did not know the correct spelling of his name. And because of this, when the officer tasked with looking into Sandra's disappearance looked into Gary Heiduk, he was unable to discover anything. However, had the officer done a little more digging, particularly through tax records on the property, he would have gotten the correct spelling of Heiduk's name, and in doing so, discovered his previous sexual crimes. And this may, in fact, have led to the saving of the two women in the basement and stopped Heiduk in his twisted plan of impregnation and starting a quote-unquote family with 10 women. However, the officer did not do this, as when Sandra's family got the first letter and showed it to him, he felt that maybe things were, you know, not as bad as they believed. And when Sandra was forced to send a second letter to her family at Christmas time, the officer decided that it was simply the case of a young woman having decided to move away from her family. And with this mindset, he simply let the matter go. However, Sandra's family is not going to be put off by any of this, and they're going to continue to try and make contact with Gary. On December 22nd, 1986, Gary Heiduk took his third captive. This was 19-year-old single mother Lisa Thomas. Thomas was currently living at home with her child and her mother. On that Monday afternoon, she was walking down the street when Heiduk pulled up beside her and asked if she was hooking. Thomas stated that she was not. In fact, she took offense to this. Heiduk asked her if she wanted a ride. Thomas declined. He asked her where she was going, and Thomas, unfortunately, stated that she was on her way to her friend's house. Heiduk offered to drive her there, and Thomas agreed. Heiduk drives Lisa to her friend's house, where she gets a pair of gloves and points out the man sitting outside to her friend, specifically the car he's driving. When Lisa gets back into the car, Heiduk asks if she wants to go get something to eat, which she agrees to. Heiduk then takes her to a TGI Fridays, and while there, he asks her if she would like to go to Atlantic City with him. She says she doesn't have any clothing. Heiduk offers to buy Lisa some clothes. He then takes her out, purchases her
two pairs of pants and two tops. And the two of them go back to his house so that she can try them on. Heidek puts the movie Splash on the VCR, gives her a wine cooler, and tells Lisa to make herself at home. Now, these actions here, again, they fly in the face of what the defense team is later going to claim, that Heidek was suffering from a severe mental illness, did not know right from wrong, and had no idea what it was that he was doing at the time that he committed these crimes. All of these actions, the, you know, taking her to dinner, buying her clothing, bringing her back to the house, they speak of an individual who is very calculating in his actions, knows exactly what he is doing, and is going to go through with anything that he has to achieve his goals. After drinking this wine cooler, Lisa passes out. And she later stated that when she came to, she was completely naked, and Gary carried her upstairs to his waterbed where he had sex with her. Now, whether or not this was consensual is really kind of left murky by Lisa herself. Afterwards, though, Gary began choking her, and in fear, she asked him to please stop. She would do whatever he wants. And at this point, Gary brought Lisa Thomas down into the basement and shackled her just as he had his previous two victims. Lisa stated that when Gary brought her downstairs, the room appeared to be empty and she became frantic, believing that Gary Heidek was in fact going to murder her, and that bags that were down in the basement were filled with body parts. It wasn't until he uncovered to the two women who were inside of the hole that Lisa realized the severity of her predicament, and that Gary had no intention of killing her. Now, again, according to Thomas as well as Rivera, after introductions were made, Heidek began making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches before stopping and ordering Lisa to first kiss his ass, and then to perform fellatio on him and to proclaim that he was the boss. After this, Heidek rapes her, and they proceed to have their dinner with him, at which time Heidek gets up and leaves the three women in the basement to discuss their predicament amongst themselves. According to various witnesses, Gary Heidek's wife, those outside, did not appear to have changed any. He still brought his various sexual partners back to his home for his weekly sessions with them. He still continued on running church services on Sunday. Again, this speaks of an individual who is able to easily compartmentalize the things that they are doing in their life in order to keep different aspects of their life separate from one another. Nobody had any idea of the women that were chained up down in the basement. On January 1st, 1987, Heidek claims another victim, this time another African-American woman by the name of Deborah Dudley. Details on how Dudley came to be in Heidek's basement are sketchy, as are details on where she was picked up. We do know that of all the women that Heidek had captured up until this point, Dudley was the only one to forcibly resist him, which led him to begin hitting the women that were under his control against one another, showing favoritism towards one if they ratted the others out or if they were more submissive to his demands, that type of thing. Dudley would not do any of this, and as a result, she was constantly battered, belittled, and tortured by Gary. Those who survived their captivity with Gary Heidick later went on to say a pecking order began to develop among the women at this time, with Rivera, his first captive, at the top. Rivera later said that this was directly due to her street smarts. She was learning how Heidick operated, and because of this, she was able to manipulate him in order to gain his trust. And this is a key point that you are going to need to remember later on as this case develops. Rivera starts being beaten less, tortured less, placed into the hole less, because she is willing to sacrifice the physical well-being of those inside Heidick's basement with her in order to further gain his trust. What do I mean by this? There was a plan to escape. Some of the women believe that Josefina Rivera informed Heidick of this plan. Rivera later stated under oath that the plan was found out, although it was not found out by her. In any event, the other women ended up being punished severely for this, while Rivera herself was not. And this further put into the minds of the other three women that Rivera was becoming a willing participant in Heidick's games. Whether this is true or not is inconsequential. The woman was a victim, and Stockholm Syndrome is a very real thing. All you need to do is look at the case of Patty Hearst to understand that. Heidick also began placing one of the women in charge to get them to rat on each other, and if this particular woman did not inform on anyone when he returned, he would beat that woman. They also claimed that Heidick began encouraging them to beat one another in order to satisfy whatever particular desires he had. Sex in the basement was a near constant. Whenever Heidick came down, he expected some form of sexual gratification from the women. Sometimes he would target only one of them. More often than not, however, he would go to one for to the other. He became excited at some point during all of this when a few of the women no longer had their periods. Heidick believed that he had impregnated them, which, thankfully for them, was not the case. He did think this, though, and as a result, he began feeding them slightly more. However, the reality is when a woman gets to a certain weight, her body goes into a sort of shock and no longer menstruates, and that's what these women in the basement were dealing with. The women began to complain to Heidick about the unsanitary conditions of their confinement, and he began providing them with things like baby wipes and a little bit of water to clean themselves. But as their complaints grew louder and time goes on, he eventually relents and will take them one at a time upstairs to bathe, after which they are expected to have sex with him and then returned to their... Now, despite this, the level of Heidick's cruelty grew to new levels. Heidick had two dogs, and at some point during this, he decided that in order to punish and degrade the women when they misbehaved, he would make them eat dog food. On January 18th, another woman joined their ranks. This was 18-year-old Jacqueline Askins, a prostitute who encountered Heidick while she was out working her beat. Jacqueline found her way into the basement, and unlike the others, was handcuffed at the ankles because her ankles were so small. The muffler clamps that Heidick had taken to using were too small to fit on her. And now there are five women down in this basement, and tension is building among all of them. Plans are being discussed about trying to overpower Heidek. Plans are being discovered. They are trapped into this never-ending cycle with Gary, unaware that very soon things are going to take a rather grisly turn. On January 14th, 1987, Gary Heidek ends up going to court with his estranged wife, Betty, who is still at this point expecting. She's demanding more money from Heidek. He's extremely evasive with the court judge, who has access to Heidek's financial records for both himself as well as the church, and insists that Heidek has a fairly good amount of money at his disposal, something that Heidek claims not to have. The judge ends up ordering that Heidek go through two psychological evaluations. After this, Heidek goes back to his normal daily routine, that is, until Sandra Lindsay had begun rebelling a bit against Gary Heidek. He puts her in the hole one evening in the beginning of February, and she attempts to push the board away, which leads Heidek to put her on the hanger, that is, the hook that is hanging from the ceiling. Unlike other times, however, Gary leaves Sandra there for over 7 days. And now on February 7th, Sandra is having a very difficult time standing and is, you know, basically hanging there like a rag doll. Heidek comes down and discovers that she is no longer moving. Some of the girls say they think that she may be dead. Heidek doesn't believe her. He undoes Sandra from the hook. She collapses to the ground. He begins to kick her and shoves her into the hole. When Sandra still does not move, Gary Heidek goes down into the hole and informs the other women that Sandra is in fact dead. What happens next is extremely gruesome. Heidek carries Sandra's body upstairs, and according to his captives, as they began to hear the sounds of what sounded like a saw being used along with a meat processor. And the house was very quickly filled with a putrid stench. Not long after, the sounds of these machines stopped working. Later, Gary comes down with a stew for his captives that is a combination of dog food and Sandra Lindsay's remains. You heard me correct on that. And he forces these women to eat their fellow captive. Now, the stench from this begins to affect his neighbors, who contact the police. Police come over. They are unable to make contact with Heidek, but instead of trying to gain access to the house to find out what is causing the problem, as the neighbors have stated that they haven't seen Heidek in a few days and they believe, you know, something may have happened, the officers simply leave. Back inside the house, Gary Heidek has placed Sandra's head inside of a crock pot where it is boiling, and her rib cage inside of a broiling pan, which he leaves to cook inside of the oven. At some point in the ensuing days after Sandra dies, Deborah Dudley really is getting on Heidek's nerves. She's not listening to him. She's fighting back against him. And Heidek drags Deborah upstairs. And when they return a period of time later, Deborah is absolutely silent. She won't say anything, at least not until after Heidek has left. And after he leaves, Deborah Dudley informs the other two women that Heidek had dragged her upstairs and showed her Sandra's head inside of the crock pot, informing her that if she does not fall into line, she is going to end up just like Sandra had. He then proceeds to show her the rib cage inside of the oven, as well as the various body parts stored inside of the refrigerator, before bringing Deborah back downstairs to think over the consequences of her actions. We're going to end today's episode at this point with Gary Heidek having killed one of his captives, terrorized another by showing them the woman's remains, and the neighbors having contacted police due to the god-awful smell that is emanating from Heidek's home. Until next time, stay morbid.